You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Carcy-Baev.
Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. On this episode, I host David Hsu, CEO of Atmassic. David brings over 30 years of engineering expertise with extensive wireless background, as his past team's radio designs have brought billions of successful devices to market. He was on the early engineering team of Atheros, and then vice president of analog, RF engineering, and vice president of engineering with Qualcomm following its 2011 acquisition of Atheros. David earned a PhD in electrical engineering from Stanford University and has been a consulting professor of electrical engineering in Stanford. We hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Ivy Podcast.
David, welcome to the Ivy Podcast. Can you tell us a little bit more about the services that Atmassic provides and what is your role within the organization?
Yes, first, thank you, John, for the chance to introduce to you Atmassic Technologies. And I'm the CEO and co-founder of Atmassic. We are a fabless semiconductor company in Silicon Valley in California. We develop both the hardware and the software technologies for very low power connected IoT devices. So we have essentially two parts to our technology. One is a very low power technology that will allow wireless connectivity solutions to have much longer battery life, usually 3 to 5 times longer. And we also combine that with energy harvesting to create solutions that have forever battery life and are battery free. So we showcased some of this in the CES in January this year and actually won the Best of Innovation Award in our category.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. And definitely congratulations on the success you guys are having so far.
Thank you.
To take that a little bit further, what problem exactly are you guys solving with your products and services at Atmassic?
The overall vision we have essentially is to reduce the problem of disposable batteries and short battery life by creating solutions that are battery free or have very long battery life instead. And one of the example I like to show essentially is that of usage of batteries. Over the last 2 decades or so, we as a society have ended up consuming more batteries than we ever did before. I believe that's because of the convenience of wireless connectivity. Imagine I have a mouse in my hand that does not need a cable to connect the data keys on it. It'd be very hard for me to now insist on having a power cord to it. Now, all of these devices now, by and large, uses disposable batteries because they're relatively low power. We don't think about 1 or 2 batteries that we use once in a while. But the composite of it is now amazingly large. It's because we are now, as you see, when you go shopping, we are buying batteries at a very high rate. Look at AA batteries when you go to a store. They're coming much bigger and bigger packs of them now. And I just checked on Amazon the other day. What's interesting is that on Amazon, do you know how many AA batteries can you buy in a pack today? The answer actually is 1,152. Don't ask me why. I don't think I'm going to buy that many at a time. At least hopefully no transfer. So changing battery is inconvenient for households. I don't know about you. In my house, I'm the designated battery changer and my time is free. But in a large enterprise, a large deployment in a stadium, when you have sensors in hard to get to places or hospitals, now changing battery become a real job. So much like we refer to painting the Golden Gate Bridge in the Bay Area, you start from one end of the bridge. By the time you get to complete the other end, it's time to start over again. So that is inconvenient, and that is, in my mind, less than desirable. But then there's the other piece of all these batteries. when you buy all these batteries, what do we do with the batteries? We throw them away. Several years ago, I think EPA put out an estimate, this was probably 4 or 5 years ago. The estimate was 3 billion batteries in the US alone. And that is 100 per second. And I don't know where they end up, but hopefully not in my neighborhood. So imagine a world whereby we can reduce the amount of batteries we consume. That'd be a good thing.
That's very interesting. And thank you for sharing that. Definitely a problem, definitely something that's needed. And I can see a lot of value in what you guys are creating. From standpoint of that fabless semiconductor technology, I'm curious, what are the latest trends that you are currently researching and looking to implement at Bosik?
We are definitely looking at several areas at the same time, but there are two areas that I would like to emphasize that we are focused on. One, as I said earlier, low power. The second piece is energy harvesting, and combining the two of them to make interesting solutions. I'll give you a poor analogy first. Imagine I come to you and say, I want to have a light source that is not connected to the power grid. And how would you go about doing it? The first thing we'll do is that we probably want to find a light bulb that is very efficient, one that hopefully is 5 to 10 times more efficient than what you buy today. Amazingly, we have that technology that's called LED light bulb. And the second piece of it will be, now we need less energy, but we still need to provide the energy somehow. So for light, you can create photovoltaic cells. So combining the two solutions, you will now have a light source that sits out there and doesn't require a power cord to it and can turn on when you need to use them. In fact, I have that in my backyard, this analogy. Now, bringing it back to connected devices we have in our homes and offices and so forth, we now applying that back to what we do for connected devices, we want a solution that has very long battery life. That means reducing the power consumption of it. And what we did from a market point of view is, being a semiconductor company, is we developed a ground-up design for wireless connectivity solution, leveraging low-power techniques that in many cases has been applied to more digital signal processing approach, expanding it to include both analog circuitry and RF circuitry. There's definitely a lot of desire for people to be battery-free using energy harvesting. There's a fair amount of work done over the last decade or so. And in many people's mind, energy harvesting is a pipe dream, and it will probably take a lot longer for it to realize. It turns out that if you reduce the amount of energy you need for a given operation, the first piece of the puzzle, then energy harvesting is much more valuable. So today, for example, we can do a full function Bluetooth beacon solution using less than 10 microamps on the average. And that level of energy is much more easily doable with energy harvesting in cases of using RF energy as the source, using light as a source, using motion or heat as a source. So what we now have is a world's first fully functional. So we now have the world's first battery-free Bluetooth solution that is fully functional and fully compliant with the standard itself. So it'd be useful for applications such as smart devices, remote controls, asset tracking, people tracking, which is kind of an interesting application today with the contact tracing needs we have around the world, and smart home devices and so forth. So we provide much lower power consumption and in many cases, battery-free solution. In the area of energy harvesting, the trend line is showing that what we have today is actually the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that we can do behind the scene, and so much more that can be brought to fruition in the years to come. So I'm looking forward to see what the world will have 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
It's very exciting and definitely very interesting trends that you guys are researching these days to implement it at Mosik. What are the biggest challenges that you guys have experienced when it comes to digital transformation, especially when it comes to adoption of new technologies? And any recommendations to overcome such barriers that you could share with the rest of us?
That's actually a very interesting question, because it's a very timely question, because we are just at the beginning of the journey of the company at Amazing. We are bringing our product to the marketplace now. So technology adoption is always a very fascinating topic to me. The way I look at technology adoption is that there are two broad categories of it. One of it is technology that is seamless in the sense that the end user doesn't even need to know it's there. They can appreciate it, but they don't need to know. I'll give you an example. Low power. If you have a remote control, let's say your battery life today is half a year, and if you can now upgrade it to a solution that gives you, say, 3 years battery life, you don't have to learn to reuse your remote control because it's a better mouse trap, SS. So that seems to be a good example of what we have. In those types, the barrier, I will argue, is low, and the adoption can be faster. Another example that is more closely tied to energy harvesting would be, imagine a battery-free on-off light switch that you have on your wall. So one that you would not need to do rewiring in your house. So such a light switch itself, we can now harvest the energy from just flipping that switch. So that small mechanical motion when you click on that switch on the wall, that in that case, from a user point of view, they don't need to learn anything new, and it would just work. So this is under the category of easy to adopt technologies. Now, the more challenging or the more interesting case is technology that has benefits, but it changes the way we behave. If you don't mind, I'm going to give you a more of a historical example that I find very interesting, and add in our second case that we are actually facing today. There might be an interesting case on see what will happen in the longer term.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Please do share.
Yeah. Many of your younger listeners may not be familiar with this historical example of HP ink cartridge. So if you remember back in, this is like 30-some years ago now, HP was introducing this inkjet cartridge technology. They have been working on it for a while. The printhead problem they have is that when you use the printhead for a while, it clogs and stops working. So it's a tough engineering problem. And one solution is you can create technologies that will help you clean the printhead. Imagine if I were to sell you a printer saying that, don't worry, after a year of use, you take out a printhead, you soak it in XYZ solution. That is a very difficult technology adoption problem to have. So what the smart people at HP end up doing essentially is that they created the concept of a disposable ink cartridge. You put enough ink behind the printhead, it will allow the printer to print successfully for the lifetime of the printhead. And you know, the rest is history. Ink cartridge is here to stay even after they solve the technology problem behind the printhead. So that will be a historical example of a how technology adoption requires thinking somewhat out of the box, what you can do. A closer to home one that we are currently working on, so it'd be interesting to see your thoughts on this one as well. We have developed, for example, we are familiar with this RFID badge that we have for workplaces. And as you know, today the way it works is that you take the badge and you put it next to the reader, usually about a couple of centimeters away, and it will help you get authorized, you can open doors and so forth. We have created a battery-free Bluetooth version of it. So what it does essentially is that if you get to within, let's say, a meter from the reader, it will recognize you and do what the RFID badge would do. So imagine that for a minute for the technology itself. Now the question is, what will allow the best adoption? Do we market it as a seamless RFID replacement in the sense that you can leave it in your pocket and it will just work work as you walk up to a door, the door will recognize you and unlock for you? Or do you say it's just a longer range RFID? One's much more boring, one's much more exciting. But the exciting part comes with a challenge, though. What if a user comes in for whatever reason, is getting too far from your reader, and it doesn't work? How do you now make the user learn something new? So, yeah, teaching a customer to do something different can, in many cases, make it more difficult for you to adopt your technology. So I'm actually quite interested to know your thoughts, or if some of your audience might have ideas how to actually market this. Is there an analogy here on how to market this solution to make the adoption easier?
Yeah, absolutely. And David, you're touching on a very, very pressing topic these days, especially for the companies who are rolling out technologies that are not so mainstream. And there's definitely quite a few case studies that could be analyzed from that perspective. And what we will do after this episode, we'll actually post a poll and gather some feedback from our listeners on some of the ideas that we can definitely share with you. One of the ideas is that, I don't know if how much you have heard, the company called Magic Leap. They're developing from the spatial computing perspective, from virtual reality technology, that's also going through a lot of that adoption transformation perspective. How do we get the users to adopt and leverage that technology? So I'm definitely looking forward to putting the two and two together.
Thank you. Likewise. And because I always find out what lets people adopt certain technologies easily and some of them less easily. So human change of behavior is a very fascinating topic.
Yes, and definitely not easy.
Definitely not easy, but very meaningful when you succeed.
Absolutely. To switch gears a little bit, I want to spend some time talking a little bit about the culture that you're building at MOSIC. Portion of our listeners are either recent graduates or second year MBAs, mostly Ivy League, and you're a graduate of Stanford, so I'm pretty sure you value the caliber of education and the importance of that. Curious to know, from standpoint of getting a glimpse into MOSIC as a company in general, can you talk a little bit more about the culture within the organization and what type of people tend to succeed within the organization?
Sure, yes. As you know, a company is made up of people. So it's a team that matters. And so the culture of organization actually is very important. There are places whereby we can all enjoy coming to work, and there are places whereby it's just a job. So obviously, being a early stage startup company in Silicon Valley, we strive to make sure that this is more than just a job. It's an adventure and a journey. So our job is to make products that are seemingly magical and hopefully easy to adopt for the users, as I mentioned earlier. And the idea of creating magical product in some cases I find it very interesting. I'll give you another example of what I consider magical product. I don't remember this. As a child, I first heard that story from Arabian Nights with the magical phrase "open sesame," when you say it and the door opens, at least in this case, the cave opens up. I always find it a fascinating story, except that I didn't realize they were actually describing a voice recognition system from Alexa today. So if you try to tell the story to a five-year-old today, they will look at you and say, "So?" So this is an example whereby something that was magical once upon a time is no longer magical because it's just convenient and just works. So for a startup company like us, what we want essentially for team members is people who believe in a vision that we can make magical things happen. We need people that are passionate about the vision, not afraid of hard work, and find creative solutions for difficult problems, not just in engineering, but also in the overall adoption of the solution. And from a cultural point of view, it's important to make sure that it's a meaningful place to work. It's a place that we work well as a team. And it's in some ways like an extension of a large family. We all spend too much time at work as is. There's no reason to make it a place whereby people don't enjoy coming to work. And the people that will succeed best are the ones that actually enjoy working in a team environment, coming up with creative solutions that will lead to what I believe would be meaningful change. And stories that you can be proud of years later and perhaps shares with your grandkids one of these days.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. When hiring for at Masek, for the candidates that interview with you directly, just curious, do you tend to get creative with your interviews? And if so, what do you look for in some of their responses?
Oh, I'm an engineer by training, so I'm very boring. So I give very boring interviews. So for the interview is actually a very difficult job if you look at it that way, right? You have a very limited amount of time to understand a candidate. So, and it's flawed in many ways just because it's very difficult to see what the ideal candidate profile is and how do you know the various pieces behind the scene for a person. So in general, I like to tell people just be yourself. And interviews are a two-way street. We are being interviewed by you as much as we are interviewing you in that regard. And as you know, when doing an interview, one of the things you want to do is you want to understand the skill set of the person, whether there's a good match. And I will argue that is level zero, and that is the most doable part of an interview. The more difficult things that is difficult to gauge, you almost have to sort of feel it, essentially, is that what is the person's aptitude to learn? Because as you know, what we do day to day after we leave school changes dramatically over time. And ability to grow on a job is just as important. And then working in a team environment, how is the person like in a day-to-day basis? How well do they learn from their own work, mistakes, and successes? How well do they learn from others as well? And finally, which I think one of the most important traits that is somewhat difficult to tell during an interview again, is that how much passion and perseverance does a person have? I guess we can remember the quote that was, I think, attributed to Thomas Edison by and large, that genius is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. And we definitely think that we like geniuses and we like those that are that will persevere and do well.
That's great. And I love that quote. It's definitely relevant to what you're talking about, especially when interviewing candidates. And I love the fact that you're saying that it's definitely a two-way street. When you interview the candidates, it's as much them interviewing you as well to see how...
Yeah, because many of the candidates, they have lots of choices. So It's important. It's a two-way street.
Absolutely. So speaking of candidates, I'm curious, as you guys are in very niche industry, what are some of the most in-demand skill set and those that are hardest to find, especially in the semiconductor industry? And what strategies do you deploy to attract the top talent to your teams? Because I understand from, you know, having experience working in, you know, IoT applications, especially supporting Bluetooth or other wireless technologies, it adds even more complexity to some of the skills you guys need. So can you shed some light on that, please?
Sure. Hiring is never easy. As you know, right? Good talent is always difficult to find, and especially when we need technologies from ranging from software to hardware to business side. And all of that, I think, it's difficult to pinpoint which one of the categories most challenging at a given moment in time. My general line is the one we need the most currently is the most difficult. So once we hire the person, there's always the next one that's most difficult. But the good news is that there is a sizable talent pool around, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I would almost argue one of the most difficult skill set is not what you already know, but the ability to learn new things, adapt to new things, and having the passion and the willingness to get things done. So I think that skill set in my mind is many cases underrated by a lot of the recruitment and interview effort. And now the strategy is, how do you attract top talent? I don't think we have a magic bullet in that, in the sense that we use our network. We are fortunate to have known people over the years, have friends at different places. Referral goes a long way. As you know, most startups hire your friends and your friends of friends. And before long, you run out of friends of friends. You have to hire friends of friends of friends and friends. So as the word goes. But getting the word out about a company helps. Sharing your vision, your product, your technology, that will attract people who are like-minded to join your endeavor. And having reach out programs is important. And I definitely do appreciate, for example, this opportunity to talk to you and your audience. And this is one way for us to get the word out about who we are. And hopefully people who are interested can reach out to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, anything that we can do from our side, as ProSource IT, we do specialize not only, you know, in you know, executive search or anything management consulting perspective, but we do partner with companies on very niche IT skill set that we help attract, we help promote the companies and so forth. So definitely looking forward to helping.
Thank you.
And in conclusion, last but not least, I like to ask, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others and why?
That's a good question. I guess I would just tell you what I'm currently reading. So I usually try to read what I feel like I need to know at a moment in time. And so I'll give you an example. Before I go on vacation, I tend to listen to audio tapes about the country and about the language and make some bad attempt to learn. For example, before my trip to Spain, I spent weeks during my commute listening to audio tapes on how to learn the Spanish language. I can now find a bathroom. That's about it. But books-wise, on my desk today, you can almost tell what is on my mind or what I'm working on. So I'm currently in the middle of reading the book called Salesforce Incentive Compensation. Don't ask me why. It's important topic, and it sort of tells you what I'm currently working on, because I believe that learning never stops. And part of the job we do is that as you move on different stages of the company, you need to learn different topics. Then reading is a very good way to do so. So sorry to point out a book that's more on the tedious side of reading. But I do have a book that just happens to be on my bookshelf as well today, on my desk actually today as well. You're probably familiar with this one. It's called Measure What Matters by John Doerr. I think it's been around for a while. And in my mind, this is a book that I do refer to periodically because it's important for any organization to understand how you are doing, where you are doing well, where you are not. So measure what really matters and adjust accordingly. And I would recommend that to all your listeners as well, if they haven't already read it.
Those are great recommendations. I've definitely heard of the last book and haven't read it yet, but definitely going to add it to my list. And for our listeners, we'll make the titles of these books available in the episode notes. David, thank you so much for your time to spend with us today to talk. I know it was very high level, and you could probably spend hours and hours talking about this topic. But we, you know,
yes,
appreciate it for your insight. And what I'd like to do is reconnect with you in a couple of years on the Ivy podcast and see how much has changed, what has evolved and so forth, as I like to do that with a lot of other executives. So definitely thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.